121 today. We, I think we read this before, but this is good to go over it again. It's very valuable subject matter. Namo Om Vishnu Padaya Krishna Prasthaya Bhutale Srimati Bhaktivedanta Swaminiti Namane Namaste Saraswati Deve Gauravani Pracharane Nirvishesha Srinivari Paschachade Satarane Om Agnati Mirandasya Anjana Salakaya Chakshurun Miritam Yena Tasmai Shri Gurave Nama Vichaitanya Mano Vishtam Stapitam Yena Bhutale Vayam rupa kadam ayam dhati svapadantikam Vanchakalpataru vyascha kripa sindhu behevacha Patitanam pavanebhyo vaishnavebhyo namo nama Sri Krishna Chaitanya Prabhu Nitananda Sri Advaita Kadadhar Sri Vasadi Gaur Bhaktivinoda Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare 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 Rama, Rama Rama, Hare Hare. Behold, I will part, I should see Maharaj, I go back to Vindaki Jai. So page 121, if you look at the paragraph that starts, everything is coming from above. Everything is coming from above that paragraph down toward the middle of the page. Let me see, what is that? Actually, it's page 122 on the page numbers. What is it, Shen, right? What? Before you're writing?
Disconnected. Oh, no.
Who is
no,
writing?
Okay, Maharaj, I think... All are getting disconnected, it seems, Maharaj.
No, no, no. No, no, only Prabhuji, you got dropped and...
Maybe.
Okay, okay.
Yeah, all right. Everything seems okay here. So it's actually page 122 on the numbers. If you look on the numbers of the page, it's 121 if you could do it in the search box. Somehow there's a difference. 122 in the page number. Everything is coming from above. What we experience at present is like the outcome of hypnosis. In the process of hypnosis, the hypnotist can make us withdraw our consciousness from anything at any moment and show us another way to view reality. In the same way, Godhead is free, and whatever he wills becomes reality. Whatever he imagines becomes reality, such as sankalpa. He can force us to see something, and when he does so, we cannot see it in any other way. This is very important to understand Krishna consciousness. We are being what we see is by the will of Krishna. Aham sarvasya prabhu, he says in Bhagavad Gita, everything is coming from me. Everything is coming from me, he does in Bhagavad Gita. Spiritual and material, all is coming from Krishna. And he can, whatever we see, that is by his will. And whatever we don't see, that is also by his will. If you can understand this principle, you can understand how everything is possible within divinity. And you can have some faith in what God is, what is Godhead. Godhead means this, the origin of everything, the origin of creation. That is the verse we were studying, Bhagavatam. Jan Mariasi Yaton Vayadi Tartas Charteshva Vigyasvarat. That first verse of Srimad Bhagavatam says, everything that is in the creation, everything that has been created, Jan Mariasi means whatever is born, whatever is created in this universe, that is coming from the Avigyasvarat, the independently supreme conscious being. Creative being, and yet this creation is only an insignificant part of his divine nature. He has infinite qualities and activities, and this world in which we live is only a negligible part of the cosmic manifestation. The whole basis of everything is there in him. It comes from up to down. and not from down to up. To the idea that everything is developing from downward to up, you must say no. A fossil is not a thing perfect or sufficient enough to create all this. To say that from a fossil intelligence is coming is a fool's conception. Rashid Amar is referring here to this evolution theory, fossils. Fossils are actually petrified bones of animals or creatures that lived before. Somehow they became petrified, and petrified means they were made into stone, but the bones were replaced with stony material. And so they appear in their original form, but a different matter, stone matter instead of bone matter. By some process that occurs. And then from those stones, they were saying that the Dharma is saying that life came, all the different forms of life arose from what was originally a stone or a fossil. But intelligence can be traced everywhere. As much as we analyze, we find higher reason, higher intelligence. Scientists are astonished to find that intelligence is within nature, and they continue to discover higher and higher laws. When they say that, when Newton says that the planets are moving according to Newton's laws, the laws of gravity, and they write some equations, F equals ma, E equals mc squared, all these equations are supposed to be regulating the activities of the material nature. The planets are supposedly inanimate objects. They also are controlled by law. Means, where are the laws? Where are the laws that they are following? The laws that the planets and so forth are following are there in nature. They belong to nature. That means that nature has some rational structure to it. Some rationality is found within nature. That rationality in nature, here is being told that rationality is essential to nature, is intrinsic to nature, and that the scientists are therefore able to find that. What is intrinsic to nature, that rationality? They are able to find that. That means that nature itself is rational, and it must be, because it is coming from a rational being. So at the bottom of everything, here is rationality, intelligence, and scientists are discovering that in the laws of nature, the higher and higher laws of nature. All those laws already existed. It is just that these fools had no awareness of it, but an extremely fine degree of order existed long before their discovery. The wonderful laws of nature existed long before their invention, and this is evident everywhere. The physical laws of nature do not exist by dint of their creation. Do the scientists create the laws of nature? They may invent so many things, but the intelligence within nature already exists, and there is something more. Power exists everywhere. Where has it come from? Power exists everywhere. Power means ability to do something, the ability to work, to perform work, for instance, is meaning your power. Power which is able to do something, to make some change in the natural order. Called power. But where has that power come from? The scientists' intelligence to discover or invent a thing. Where has it come from? Is it coming from the brain, or is it merely a portion of dead flesh? Does intelligence come from somewhere else beside the brain? Consciousness, spirit, is all-pervading. It is present even in the trees, stones, earth, ether, air, everywhere. And to know the truth, we must connect with the conscious principle of the infinite. What is the infinite? He is almighty, omniscient, omnipotent, all-sympathetic, all-loving. Our real aspiration must be to have direct connection with him, leaving aside the charm of his created substance. We should want to negotiate how we can have connection with the Creator himself. So this point is very important also. The conscious principle. We think we look out at the universe and we don't see the conscious principle there. Yet we know that it must be there. It is coming from consciousness, everything coming from consciousness. So nothing can be without that. That is basis. So if we want to know the truth about reality, we have to reach to the conscious plane, the conscious principle that's behind the things. That, only when that is reached, then we have understood the truth of reality. Otherwise, we have not properly grasped. There are some missing knowledge that we have yet to attain. When one is not reached to understand how this reality that we are experiencing is also created of conscious substance, as conscious substance as its basis. And what that conscious basis is ultimately Godhead, the understanding of the Creator, Krishna. When one has reached that depth of knowledge, then he can say he has understood the absolute truth, the ultimate conception of reality. And his position is not simply that of Creator. What is someone is talking? Govinda Nandini? You have some background noise that you can mute your microphone. His position is not Hare Krishna. Can someone inform Govinda Nandini to mute your microphone? No.
It's not from her, Maharaji. It's not from her, actually. Someone else is there. She's muted already.
New Jaipur.
Some Russian.
Can everyone please mute their microphone? Tell them. Mute their microphone, then they can join us. This world is the creation of a lower order, but a higher creation also exists in a plane of reality which is infinitely higher than this world of experience. We should inquire whether it is possible for us to have a life in that soil. We should try to understand what are the layers of reality in that realm of consciousness and how we can go higher and higher in that plane. We should inquire about that and find out how we can enter there. We must try to understand what is the key to the entrance into that transcendental abode. This should be the basis of our search for truth. We should inquire into how to become free from both the plane of renunciation and the plane of exploitation. So what is the meaning of this? How to enter into the plane of consciousness? At present, we are not in the plane. We are in the plane of unconsciousness, material energy. Material nature means the plane of unconsciousness, in which if everything is unconscious except for me, then consciousness is superior to matter. And I can exploit that. Then it is all passive substance. And whatever I want to do with it, I can do it because I am active substance. Consciousness means active substance. Matter means inactive substance. So when I look at the world and I see an active substance, and I am the active substance, then the only thing I can do is exploit. I can utilize that. That is the mentality of material consciousness. The spiritual consciousness means when I look out, I am conscious, and whatever I see is also conscious. This is personalism. Whatever I relate to is conscious person. Well, the meaning of personalism, of Vaishnavism, is personalism. That we try to relate to things in a personal way, not an impersonal way. That with respect and honor to all others, because they are persons just like myself. And that is the Vaishnav mood and attitude. And not only that, not only others are persons, but the whole creation is personal. And so I must deal with everything in a very personal and respectful way, honorable way, and affectionate way. It's like the materialistic persons are becoming so cruel to nature. They will pollute the nature. They will denude the forests. They are polluting the air. What is the purpose of all that? It's simply to make money. They don't care about anything. They have no honor, respect for nature, what to speak of other persons. Only they are interested in themselves. So this kind of mentality is material consciousness. In the spiritual plane of consciousness, then we have more different relationship with everything and everyone. This is what is being explained here. This is the fundamental basis of Krishna consciousness. Once Krishna went to the court of the Kauravas, the camp of Duryodhana and Dhritarashtra, with talk of peace. At that time, Karna, Duryodhana, and others in the party attempted to bind him down and put him into prison. They thought that if Krishna were to be in prison, then the whole Pandava camp would automatically be finished. They knew that Krishna was life and soul, as well as advisor of their enemies, the Pandavas. They thought, now we have Krishna in our fist, we must immediately imprison him. They went to tie him down. Krishna manifested his universal form. At that time, he revealed his divine nature in such a way that the men who went to tie him down were perplexed. They thought, what is he? Krishna manifested his universal form of thousands of heads, hands, and legs. They thought, this is a gigantic thing. Here in this form, we find Baladeva on one side, Arjuna on another, and Bhrigu on another. Where are we to apply the rope? We can't. They were perplexed. At that time, when Krishna showed his universal form in the assembly of Gurus at Hastinapur, those who were present began to chant in praise of Krishna. Bhishma, Drona, Narada, and Vyasa were present at that time in the assembly. And they began to praise the Lord. Hearing their voices, the blind king Dhritarashtra was charmed and prayed to Krishna. I can't see you, I am blind, but I hear these great persons chanting your praises. Upon seeing your wonderful form, you can do anything and everything. So for the time being, please remove my blindness. Let me see your figure and color. Let me behold the beauty which they are praising so much. After removing my blindness, you may again make me blind. And Krishna replied, it is not necessary for your blindness to be removed. I need only command that you see me, and you will be able to see me. That is the very nature of seeing him. Our vision of God, it depends on his sweet will. It is not the eye that can see, nor the eye that can hear him. He is above sense experience. Only by his will may he be seen. He said, you will see me, and Dhritarashtra saw him. Although he was blind, still he could see Krishna's divine form. Then what is Krishna? If a deaf man can hear him and a blind man can see him, then what is the nature of that divine substance, which is Krishna? Now here is another very instructive point. What is seeing and what is hearing? Seeing is not just a reflection of some object on the eyeball. The dead man has his eyeball complete. Dead body, the eyeball may be there complete, but does it see anything? Can it see? Because the eyeball is there, something in the environment is there, but can it see anything? No. Why? Is the seeing done by the eyeball? Not by the eyeball, and not by the reflection of the light into the eyeball from some object. Seeing is a different thing. It occurs at a different level in the conscious plane. Without the consciousness being there, seeing has no power to work on simply physical level. Like that. So at this kind of seeing, Dhritarashtra was blind. It was not necessary that he have any eye power to see from the eyeball. That power of seeing came from a different plane, and Krishna was operating at that level. And he was able to see transcendental. What is that? Turn underneath. Just making more background noise.
No, Maharaj, it's from New Jaipur. It's from New Jaipur.
Oh.
I think New Jaipur, you know, this microphone is very near to his nose. His breathing sound is coming, Maharaj.
I inform him. Please mute his microphone.
I did, Maharaj.
Okay, not listening. He doesn't know how to do it, perhaps. Very distracting for everyone. Another time, when Arjuna wanted to see the universal form of Krishna, the Visarupa Krishna said, yes, Arjuna, see me. Arjuna beheld his universal form. Krishna asked him, what do you see? And Arjuna replied, I am seeing so many wonderful divine manifestations. It is a wonder of wonders. So Krishna's free will is the basis of everything. We are living in correlation with that absolute power. There is no stability to the environment where we live at present. All importance is on the divine will of Godhead, because the cause of all causes, from him this world emanates, and by him it is maintained. Then the plane of dedication, however, is far higher than the mundane realm. Now we are told that by dedication, by surrender, we can have direct connection with the center of everything that be. So our advice to the scientists is, physician, cure thyself. We have come to give so many dazzling models of civilization to the world, but first you should cure yourself fully. So you have to ask him to please mute his microphone, or he has to go from this group. Krishna Prabhu?
Yes, Maharaj, I'm deleting this.
Okay. Yes, cut him from this list. And you request that you kindly mute your microphone before joining. And I know I'm disturbing to everyone. Then, so our advice, as physician cure yourself, you have come to give so many dazzling models of civilization to the world, but first you should cure yourself fully. Then what you have come to distribute is all the hopes, the laws of nature, applied by everything that surrounds us, is only the sweet will of the Supreme. The laws of nature are not a rigid thing, their basis is the sweet will of an autocrat. So what you know, that is nothing. It is no knowledge. At any moment, the laws of nature may be changed. The sweet will of the Supreme Autocrat and another set of rules may completely replace them. The key to enact the change in our ability to experience reality is in his hands. He may easily say, oh, Arjuna, you see this, but I am that. And Arjuna will say, yes, now I see that you are that. Everything may be seen in one way, or by his will, and at the next moment, that vision of reality may be withdrawn by him. So the knowledge we can acquire through materialistic education has no value at all. With this realization, we should enthusiastically begin the search for Sri Krishna in reality. Krishna is charm himself. The all charming absolute. What? You have some question? Can you wait until after?
Okay, Maharaj.
I'll have some time for a question afterwards. Krishna is charm himself. He is the all-charming absolute. Our innate need is to find sweetness, beauty, rasa, anandam, ecstasy, happiness. Everyone wants this. No one can say, I do not want happiness. No one from the lowest atheist to the highest atheist can deny this. All will say, yes, I want ecstasy, I want sweetness, happiness, peace. This is the common demand in every conceiving unit, from the worst atheist to the greatest theist. Wherever there is conception, everyone wants peaceful existence. So our direct necessity is with him, Sri Krishna, reality, the beautiful. He is rasa, vaisa, ecstasy, beauty himself. We must begin our search for that. Do not lose a moment. Don't waste a minute of your time in wild goose chasing. Give up everything. Sarva dharma, put it to a child. Give it behind. Give up all phases of duty that you are so busily engaged in. It is all worthless. Begin the search for that divine principle who is the creator, the master of everything, and the fulfillment of everything. search for him directly. Give up all your so-called obligations and duties in your relative position. They are misconceived, misunderstood from your present defective position. Do not rely on them. Make a direct search for the prime cause from which everything is coming as a miracle. He is the fulfillment of our lives. He is the fulfillment of every atomic existence in all worlds. Once Prabhupada actually asked us, the scientists, he said, you have to prove to the scientists about Chintu Shakti, that everything is fine on the basis of a Chintu Shakti. Chintu Shakti means the inconceivable energy of the Lord. Like a miracle. Everything is a miracle, actually. If we objectively look at nature and try to understand it in an objective way and not try to fit it into our meager conceptions, our puppy-brained ideas. Sometimes Prabhupada told us puppy brain. We have puppy brains. And we are trying to understand nature, the scientists, or anyone, trying to understand things with our puppy brains. But really, everything is so miraculous. How everything has been made, all the forms of the of nature, the material bodies, the plants and the animals. When we analyze very, very deeply, and if we can go even to the conscious origin of all those things, we'll find it's miraculously coming about. It's not an ordinary thing. Although we apply our ordinary conceptions to reality, reality is actually far more wonderful than what our ordinary conceptions can grasp. And so if we look at reality and nature with that kind of idea, that it's all the miraculous Chintashakti, inconceivable power of the Lord, that by these things, by which these things are there, then you will see in the Krishna consciousness. How to convince the proud, or proud materialist, the proud scientist, the proud rationalist, that what they are, even the rationality itself, what kind of thing is that? What kind of marvelous, miraculous thing is rationality? But how to convince those rationalists and so forth that what they are thinking, what they are doing, that is not all in all. It is also a creation of a more wonderful source than what the rationality itself can reveal. The rationality itself was created by something more than rationality. Well, then, how to understand and how to appreciate that? We cannot understand, but we have to appreciate, and we have to follow what the Vedic scriptures tell us about that. How to properly worship, honor, and adore that platform, that creative platform on which we are all being manifest and everything is being manifest. And that is the process of developing our Krishna consciousness in that direction. So we must try to march toward Krishna with his blessings on our heads. And his agents will give us important help in that direction. Others can do nothing to help us in our inner search. They must take shelter of the saints. They must take shelter of his divine name. It is inseparable from his existence. The sound aspect of divinity can help us a great deal on the way back to Godhead. His holy name is our slogan, our war cry. Hare Krishna. With that slogan, we shall march on with his genuine agents. We must follow them and withdraw ourselves from all other possibilities and promises, all so-called prospects of life. They are nothing. They are of no value to us. There are many inequities in the world. Student says, there are many inequities in the world. There is a lot of unfairness, is there not? How can we account for that? Fair and unfair are both false. They are just like a dream. One may have a good dream or a bad dream. In either case, it's only dreaming. So one should not waste energy to remove the unfair and to increase the fairness. Fair, unfair, is all false, completely false. In the Chaitanya Charitamrita, it is written, प्रकृति पत्रवाद्रज ज्ञान सब मनोधर्म श्री मंदिर सब ब्रह्म. In the material world, conceptions of good and bad are all mental concoctions. Therefore, saying this is good, this is bad, and this is a mistake. The basis of this calculation is false. Our real interest is not there. There's a false scent we are pursuing. Our fulfillment is not to be found in that direction at all. In this material world, there is very little distinction between fairness and unfairness. Everything in this world is based on cheating. Everyone is cheating. There may be cheating of different kinds, but all are cheating. Any fairness or unfairness is an illusion. One may have a good, hopeful dream or a disastrous dream. Both are dreams. Both are false. And fairness within this world is also false. It is a mental concoction. And what is apparently evil within the relative conception of evil is also false. Why allow ourselves to waste time in a wild goose chase? After all, these relative conceptions of fair and unfair, good and bad, good and evil, are all false. Whether there is a good hope or a bad hope, all hope within the plane of misconception is based on mental concoction. Student. But there are so many people that are starving in the world. It seems unfair. Srila Srila remarks. Well, to speak of starving, we are in a cave, imprisoned in a cage. It is not desirable for the soul at all. The whole world, sun, stars, moons, oceans, mountains, all are vanishing and again coming and going. You may be the lord of all you survey, but you are a lord in the cremation ground, a master of the cremation ground. Only to deplore, though everything is passing away, every second is passing away. In great elegy, the boast of heraldry, the pomp of power, and all that beauty, all that wealth there gave, awaits alike the inevitable hour. The path of glory leads but to the grave. Everything here leads only to the grave and will be finished. Student, I guess what I want to ask is how we can account for these inequities. I know that you are saying that there is no distinction, but why is there suffering? Blessed are Maharaj. The cause is the misuse of free will of the jiva soul, the misuse of the wealth given to you. Student, given by the supreme power, Srila Maharaj, by the supreme power, as part of a particular potency, you have free will eternally existing within you, and by misuse of your freedom, you have selected to become a king in the mortal world just as Satan is portrayed in Milton's Paradise Lost. He wanted to reign in hell rather than to serve in heaven. The free will, the weak, the vulnerable, the free will, the weak, vulnerable, childlike free will misused. We came here to be monarch of all we survey, to reign in hell. Inherent adaptability is an innate feature of the soul. We could have selected service in heaven, then our desires would have been fulfilled. But we have selected the wrong thing. We have moved in the wrong way. We wanted to be monarch. We could not select slavery in the higher realm. We selected monarchy in hell. All right, so we'll stop here and then we'll see what questions anyone has. So Shambhu, you had some question very patiently.
Yes,
waiting.
Maharaj. Yes, Maharaj. Maharaj, you know, like here, Srila Sridhar Maharaj is telling that, you know, we must, you know, what you can say, you know, see things as being, you know, shown to us by, you know, this higher, you know, authority, like, you know, supreme power or, say, his agents. But Maharaj, we have a habit of understanding everything, like, you know, even the, you know, spiritual, you know, things also, even scriptures and everything, within our, you know, limited, you know, way of understanding things. So then how to come overcome that, you know, what you can say, habit we have.
So it means that when we hear about spiritual knowledge, we should not let that register in our mind or intelligence. Give it not for that. Even spiritual knowledge should not be tried. We should not try to conceive that with our mind or intelligence. We should not try to nearly hear that with our material ear. Neither should we see the agents of the Lord in a material way. We have to try to recognize that there is something more. And that something more means that What is going on is not within my control. It is beyond my control. And I am an instrument of that higher plane. And everything is being activated from that higher platform, not from my lower platform. It's not my doing. We have to put ourselves with complete faith in the hands of the Lord and see everything from that perspective. Even chanting Hare Krishna. As long as I think I am chanting Hare Krishna, I'm not chanting Hare Krishna. When I understand that the holy name is chanting, is manifesting itself, vibrating my tongue, then that is chanting Hare Krishna. Krishna's name is not within my control. It is not within my jurisdiction. Krishna's name is transcendental. So, we may engage in sadhana bhakti to keep our own self in that line, to keep ourselves in the line of at least openness to the control of the Lord, to the will of the Lord. At least we are preparing ourselves to be open to that, to be receptive to that. But ultimately, it depends on our faith. Just like we were telling that to understand things in truth means to penetrate to the knowledge that all things are created and manifest by Krishna, the Supreme Lord, the Supreme Divinity. Aham sarvasya bhavama tak sarvam prabhavate kimapam takanti mam buddha bhava samanvita. Who understands that I am the source of everything, that worships me with love. That is the transcendental platform. We simply worship Krishna with love, understanding him to be the source of everything. And even my own ability to worship Krishna, that is coming from Krishna. Even my own ability to understand Krishna, to remember him, that is coming from Krishna, everything. My devotional life, my material life, whatever may be there, that is coming from Krishna, by his grace. Not from my intelligence, not from my sincerity, not from anything coming from me, but from him.
Maharaj?
The only thing we must do is have faith in that. And that means revolutionary humility and submission. We don't think anything of ourselves. We think only of him. And thereby we cross this ocean of ego. Ego and conception of life, and we come to the transcendental platform, and which is enacted from the transcendental platform, which is enacted from the higher plane. I think Prabhupada said something like that in his introductory speech about the holy name. It is enacted, the holy name is enacted from the transcendental platform. Platform beyond the mind, intelligence, and ego. The more we can enter into that, the more we are becoming Krishna conscious. Of course, it's by the mercy of Krishna that can happen. How we can get that mercy, that we can only beg for that. Krishna will not neglect us if we are sincerely beggars. That we are sincere beggars and feel great pain in the separation and loss of Krishna. And then he won't neglect us. He'll give us shelter into that place. Once Srila Maharaj told about Srila Prabhupada, how is it possible that he went all over the world and distributed Krishna consciousness like an ocean? Like an ocean, he distributed Krishna consciousness to the whole world. He thought very humbly, I am only able to deliver a few drops. But Prabhupada, he went all over the world and was distributing this Krishna consciousness like an ocean. How is it possible? And he thought, only by his extreme negativity, because of his negativity, how much I am depending on Krishna, how much I am empty, my own self. I am empty, I have no ability, nothing within me to do, to be able to, by my own substance, I can't do anything. But if only I am depending on Krishna, you can see a draw plus prayers, so many prayers he wrote, how much humble and empty he felt, and how much dependence upon Krishna he was experiencing. And by that power, that divine power was able to come down and manifest itself through his humble servant. That kind of mentality. Negative. The negative is the only thing that will attract the positive. Even in the material world, we understand that principle. Negative will attract the positive. So positives will repel. But if you are negative, then the positive will come and act through you. So don't try to be positive. Don't try to compete with Krishna. Submit yourself wholly and fully. With negativity, beg, cry, whatever you have to do to get the mercy of the Lord to an extent. And allow that to do your work. Allow that to do his work. And I'm perfect. Perfect existence, so we can come to that point. What else we have? Six questions. If you could find the answer, please. All right. Let's see what questions.
Maharaj, you said that, you know, Prabhupada said about this miracle. You know, scientists, you know, like, you know, they're, you know, thinking that everything can be understood by our, you know, research and, you know, kind of, you know, our way of, you know, understanding things. But Prabhupada said about, you know, this miracle. So then how to, you know, what he can say, push them to that, you know, direction, that, you know, they should accept things, you know, things are happening in miracle way.
That will be up to Krishna. But we can only preach. We preach the truth and then allow that too, then that's up to the individual to accept or not, to accept or not accept. If we give them the idea, they may accept it. Just like I told one scientist, matter comes from life. Only I told him that much. Have you ever considered matter comes from life? After 1 year, he wrote a book that on that principle. He was a complete materialist. No one had ever told him that idea before. Had no way to think that because no one was, everyone was telling him life comes from matter, life comes from matter, life comes from matter. As soon as he heard matter come from life, the idea came to him, oh, yes, someone actually believes that. His way, is it possible to think like that? And like that, his whole conception changed. All conviction changed. Like that. We only preach what we understand, as much as we, even I did not understand how matter comes from life. Anyhow, Prabhupada told us, and so I believed it, and I went and told to the Nobel laureates like that, and he accepted it. So, you first understand that, and you first accept that within your heart. And just by repeating, even you don't fully understand, because how can we understand Chinta Shakti? Even we don't fully understand, we explain that to others. My Gurudev said it is like this. The scripture says it's like this. And then we leave it up to the sincerity, the subtlety of that soul, whoever we are preaching to. And their subhuti will allow them to accept, yes, what you are saying is correct. That's all. All right. I will do your questions. Maya, is that by which things can be measured? Yes. So how to understand the statement? Just as I was explaining. The spiritual energy is a chintya shakti, inconceivable. But we try to grasp that spiritual potency that is given the material energy is also coming from the divine potency of the Lord. Maya Dakshina Prakriti, Krishna says, is my energy, my Prakriti, and it is touched by divinity. And if the scientists explore deeply enough into that material thing, that object of their consciousness, they will find that this also has the same conscious basis. It has an ultimately conscious basis. But rather than seeing that, they try to see it as something that is under their conscious control. They see themselves as conscious, and what is outside their consciousness, they see as objective, as not conscious, and therefore measurable. But it's not measurable. Ultimately, it's not measurable. Who applies their intelligence very keenly can understand the limitations and mistakes that the scientists are making, even with their scientific theories. There are some severe limitations to what they're saying. Somehow or other, the equations are working. But that working of their equations, that is all by the will of the Lord also. They are not working, actually, if one applies his intelligence very deeply to what the theories the scientists are giving. He will find many defects, many irrational things are contained in our whole scientific conception that the scientists have given us. It is not a perfect match. No perfect match. There's always errors. Some limitation of their measurements is there. Whenever they give a measurement, they also give a deviation, an error deviation. How accurate their measurement is, there's always plus or minus some deviation. They measure that thing again and again and again. Maybe they measure it 10 times, even they measure it 50 times. Some, they find some standard error of deviation, standard deviation of errors. It doesn't always come out to be the same thing. After you go out to 3 decimal places, 4 decimal places, 10 decimal places, like that, they will find there's some error in their measurement. It means it is not exact. Then what are they leaving out? They don't know. Whatever they're leaving out, they don't know. They only know that what is within their conception, their theory, they can measure to a certain degree, and beyond that, they can't measure. So what they're leaving out, they don't know if how important or unimportant that is. They have no idea. So just like in relativity, Einstein's theory, the appearance of one of the Mercury moons, one of the moons of Saturn, sorry, Jupiter, one of the moons of Jupiter, it comes at a certain fraction of a second, will determine whether Newton's law is hold or Einstein's law is hold. Revolution around Jupiter of the moons, they have a certain periodic revolution. Sometimes that moon will appear sooner, a few seconds sooner, microseconds sooner, or might come later, depending on whether you're using Newton's law or Einstein's law, or relativity law. You can measure the difference in the periodic revolution of the moon. You'll see some difference. One equation will account for that closer than the other. Newton's laws won't account for it as closely as Einstein law. So they can measure, according to the law, they can make certain measurements. But Newton's, even Einstein's law may be giving a closer approximation to the appearance of that moon. But at the same time, it is not exact. There's some deviation in applying that equation, some limitation. So such a slight difference will determine whether you're using Newtonian or Einsteinian mechanics. But then there's other slight variations in Einstein's equations. And some new theory may be necessary to explain that, but they don't know what that is yet. So ultimately, like that, they can come up with closer and closer measurements, but they can't get it exactly. Because they don't know the exact reality, what it is in itself, or what kind of law is there, if there's any. that even if every measure finding, we assume the laws can be applied to nature, but we don't really know that for sure. Is our law, but Krishna's law may be different, and his law is different definitely, because his law is based on his own spontaneous imagination and creativity. Imagine Shakti. You can't be measured. And many things can't be measured in this world. Life, what is life? What is love? What is mercy? These things can't be measured. So it's not that everything in reality can be measured. If you think like that, that everything can be measured, that is another kind of Maya. That is Maya. You think that everything can be measured. How do you measure consciousness? This has to be done, treated in a different way. Consciousness can only be related, understood in a personal way. What is within someone's consciousness? How is someone's consciousness? What is the nature of it? That can only be understood by another conscious being in a conscious way. Can't be understood by weighing it or measuring it with some ruler or by some light wave. Some light wave or sound wave. We can't understand consciousness like that. It has to be understood in a personal way, by a person, of another, in relationship to another person. Then question two. Svapna sthana jiva is in between the material world and spiritual world and chooses. There is no material world sense of it to become attracted to. You're saying in the Svapna sthana, the jiva is in between material world and spiritual world, and he has to choose between one or the other. Well, if he's in between, there must be a material world. Why are you saying there's no material world? Material world is always there, or the jiva in the marginal position. Marginal position means he is in between the material and spiritual world, so material world is there. At least in potential form. As soon as he makes the decision, the whole material world manifests itself. Just like when you are sleeping, as soon as you wake, the whole world is there. From your waking, according to your consciousness, you will awaken to the material or the spiritual world. Your consciousness will determine what you see. According to your consciousness, Krishna will manifest the material or spiritual world. I can think like that. If my consciousness is in the forgetful mode, I will awake to this material plane. If my consciousness is in the mode of submission and surrender to the Lord and his agents, then I will awaken to the spiritual mode. Something like that, I guess we have to imagine. Krishna through change of body and transmigrations carried out by Panchagni. Five fires. Can you elaborate on this? I don't know anything about that rule.
Well, I have a question.
Panchagni. What's that? What question?
Maharaj, actually, in modern science, we say something is equal to something, like force is equal to ma. So, but when we come to life, can we equate life to something? Is it possible?
Yes. We can understand what life is. Because it is distinguished. Life is distinguished from non-life. So in order to distinguish life from non-life, we must know what life is. Even negatively, we can understand. that life is different from the negation of life. Negation of life means death. Actually, because of death, we can understand what life is. There's something just like, how do we know a tree is alive or a worm? It may move around, it may grow and know so many different things, but ultimately, because it dies, a thing dies, then we can understand it was a living thing. A stone doesn't die, therefore we don't give it any quality of life. Maybe over a long time, it may die. Devastated. But because we don't see that in our lifetime, or many lifetimes, we see the stone, we don't give any quality of life to the stone. But that which dies before our eyes, we understand that must be alive.
Much, but the mechanical apparatus or the devices, they also stop working. So we cannot say they have life. Like some vehicle stops moving. Suppose some vehicle has some problem and also
vehicle, the principles of the vehicle, we know what that is. That it has to have some gasoline, there's a combustion engine. If the gasoline runs out, then the vehicle stops. But we know their principle. We know what the principle
of the body also this body is a machine.
But we know
the body also
die.
Machine.
Yes, but
the body doesn't
die just from not eating. We know we have to feed the body, but it goes on. And then there's a point when the body won't go on, even you feed it. When it's dead, the body will be treated, but it won't go on. The tree needs water to grow. And if it dies, you can put all the water you want on the tree. It won't do anything. Like that. Power is a different thing.
So Maharaj, life becomes a negation of death here.
What's it? There's the negation of death, we can say that. But there's also many other understandings, positive understandings of life. Life is a different principle, a different category than the matter. Which I think we explained that one time with you, that matter has the principle of difference. Chemistry has the principle of identity, but life has the contradictory principle of identity and difference within it. It is identical to its body and functioning and different from that at the same time. It is its body. It's identical. It identifies with its body and the mechanism of its body. That is also part of the life, but there's also something different. For something more than just the body and its mechanism. That kind of category that we call life. Not completely captured by its physical and chemical properties. It is that, but it is something more than that also. That is life. It has a kind of tatashta existence. That we characterize by this kind of marginal position in which it is both the body, the activities of the body, and something else more than that.
Yes, ma'am.
So it can't be captured by the physical and chemical properties. Completely captured by that. Now what that is, that requires another category of comprehension. We may call it a particular concept. And that concept can't be regulated by any law because it's neither physical nor chemical. It does not fall within the laws of physics and chemistry. It is something more, something what you call synthetic. It synthesizes that with something else, some unity. A unity higher than the physics and the chemistry can comprehend. But it is a thought. It is also a concept. And then beyond the life, we can also understand consciousness. It has something even higher. than life. I can go on. Consciousness, self-consciousness, reason, spirit. There are so many different categories above that. Then quantum, what is quantum fluctuation? Chart number 4. Anyhow, that's a difficult question, a very technical question. Only you can measure so much in quantum, according to quantum laws. Schrodinger's equation, so many different equations they have. There are certain limitations. Heisenberg uncertainty principle tells us that there are certain limitations to what we can measure in a quantum system. Because these things move at jumps, they jump from one energy to another. There is no law governing that jump. It happens spontaneously. When one goes from one energy level to another by a quantum leap, that can't be measured. It's spontaneous movement. Some photon may come with a certain energy and raise that electron to a higher level, but sometimes it may simply jump by its own spontaneous nature, which is what happens in radiation. Radiation, when they drop the atomic bomb, there's so much radiation coming out. That can happen spontaneously, just like when radioactive decay means even after you drop the bomb, there's some radiation coming. Right, that radiation is coming by a spontaneous emission of photons, of light particles, according to the scientist's explanation. But those photons are coming out randomly. You can't predict when they will come. So something like that is a quantum fluctuation. We can't tell when it will happen, but it happens. Can you explain the following quote in a more simple way? LPC is in fact the first tangible application of another theory called loop quantum gravity, which cunningly combines Einstein's theory with quantum mechanics. Many theories like this to work out what happens when microscopic volumes experience an extreme gravitational force as happens near the Big Bang. In the mid-80s, rewrote the equation of general relativity in a quantum mechanical framework together with theoretical physicists Smolin and Rovelli. Astikhar later used this framework to show that the fabric of space-time is woven from loops of gravitational field lines. From a far enough in space appears smooth and unbroken. But a close look reveals that space comes in invisible chunks or quanta. I don't think I can explain that in any simple way, Prabhu. I heard that there was some attempt to combine quantum mechanics and relativity. A very complicated mathematical endeavor to try to do that. And quantum mechanics has very difficult equations to work with. And relativity has tensors, matrices, that one has to work with in order to understand them. Sometimes quantum mechanics is also described by matrices, Heisenberg matrices. And these require many, many variables to put in those equations. And to picture what is going on when you combine those equations is extremely difficult, maybe probably impossible. Can't be imagined because it's so many intricate mathematical components are involved in writing those equations. So to picture what's going on is not so easy. may be impossible at this time.
Maharaj, when he writes that this sentence, it combines Einstein's theory of gravity with quantum mechanics. So I think this is misleading, Maharaj, because actually it has not been combined, but just using this.
They just combine them, yes. It's hard to combine them because of the in quantum mechanics, the time function is a separate variable. It's a steady variable. It's a steady. It's only conceived in a linear way. Time is not combined into the quantum mechanics equations. Quantum mechanics only deals with a spatial dimension. Time is there, but it comes in as a parameter, an external parameter. But in relativity, time is intrinsic to the space-time. It is integrated into the space-time dimensionality of Riemann space. In quantum mechanics, in quantum mechanics, to use a different type of space, which is time independent, called Hilbert space. So to combine the two spaces into one system, I don't know if they can actually do that, because they work on two completely different frameworks. One, Hilbert space for quantum mechanics, the Riemann space for relativity, relativistic mechanics. So actually, any valid combination of these two theories would be very improbable. Unless they change the nature of both, it would be very only they can make some kind of a patchwork, a unity of these two theories because of the time variable is different in both systems, how they treat time. In quantum mechanics, time you can put with a plus or minus sign, and it doesn't change the equation. If you do that in relativity, it will change it completely. So they have two different ways of treating time. The combination of these two theories is therefore quite problematic. Anyhow, somehow they have done it, maybe. One can understand all those mathematical things that they are doing. We don't know. Anyhow, I couldn't make more of it than that. I haven't looked into those things recently. The development in those areas is so rapid, I can't keep up with it all. And
actually, one of the problems. One of the criticisms that I had heard about this, quantum gravity. Was that they are taking that only these four are the fundamental forces. But in reality, there may be some other, category of forces which are not known. So to propose that this quantum gravity will be a complete theory of everything, that will be a preposterous. I mean, it cannot be said a priori. So in that sense, it is, not accepted by the, even a sizable section of the scientific society, that it will be this kind of success. Even Stephen Hawking has accepted something like that, Manas, that we haven't got a real working theory, and this is good for science, he says. It's good for science because it leaves something for the scientists to study about. Everything is already completed, then we cannot study anything. So something is remaining for us, and that's good for scientists. That's what he says, Manas. A similar quote is there.
And according to question 6, according to Srimad Bhagavatam, the sun is pulled by horses. How to explain this to the scientists that this is not a mythological statement or story? Well, just like we were explaining, Srimad Bhagavatam explained this. If Krishna wants you to understand like the sun is being pulled by horses, then who is to stop? Who is to stop then? We are saying, the scientists are saying, it's explained by gravity or whatever. They are understanding in that way and seeing in that way. But they can be seen in any way. What is the, what is the scientist understanding like that in terms of gravity? What is making him understand it like that? His imagination. Scientists require great imagination, great creativity in order to come up with all these theories. They're theories. It's a way of seeing things. And modern way of seeing things has developed gradually over historical time. They have come to accept certain things as true, certain imaginary ideas. Gravity. What is gravity? Actually, you still don't know what gravity is. Einstein, Newton said it was a kind of force of attraction between the apple and the ground. Apples were falling for so many centuries before Newton. Nobody thought of any force that was connecting the apple to the ground. Nobody ever thought of that. Suddenly, Newton thought maybe there's some force that's pulling the apple to the ground. And from that idea, from an idea, there was nothing there, nothing to see. But he had some idea that some force must be there doing that. Then he came up, and then from that time on, people began to think of gravity. So, because this idea had come into the human mind, they began to see things in that way. But before that, they may have had some different imagination about things, horses pulling things. Who is to say which one is right? They're both ideas. And our world is constructed from these ideas. Our worldview is constructed from these ideas. And where are those ideas coming from? And Gita, Krishna says, Sarvasichaham, Ridishani Vishtam, Taksmatir Gyan, Mabhavananchala. These all are coming from me. Remembrance, knowledge, forgetfulness, it's all coming from me. So the ideas are also coming by the great magician, the great hypnotist, and we are forced to see in that way. But if you surrender to Krishna, he will allow you to see things in his own divine way also. So that's what we are trying to tell the scientists, that don't think that you have understood everything by your particular method of seeing. It is not so fixed in stone what you are saying. You must be flexible, and you must understand that more is there to see than what is in your philosophy. More than you can even imagine is there in reality. Don't become so convinced by your so-called rationalism. Anyhow, there are different ways of approaching that. We're also trying by arguing from their position. Sometimes it's difficult to argue against a particular position. So what you have to do is enter their position and show how it is defective, and thereby try to expand their thinking. Just like now, I have found some research work on bacteria. They're very interesting. They found that the bacteria are sentient. They have consciousness. Only way to explain the activities of the bacteria are to say that they have some kind of elementary consciousness, awareness of their environment and of themselves. Not a way, other way to explain it, because the whole theory of the gene, the genome, they call it, the whole gene expression has so many codes in it. And generally, the idea has been that the gene is a fixed backbone of the cell, of the bacteria, or cell, or whatever. That there's some fixed code, but they find in the bacteria that the code can change. It's one thing, it has one structure at one time, and under different circumstances, it takes a different structure. So they found that the gene can change. If the gene can change, then who is changing it? Who is arranging the whole thing? The whole thing looks very fluid and dynamic now. From the most recent studies of the gene, they find that this whole theory of genetic fixation is wrong. There are no fixed gene. It is moving, it is changing according to certain circumstances of the environment, of the inner quality of the cell and the outer environment that it finds itself in. The genetic code can change. What that means for the people now, they are doing this genetic identity of criminals. They are telling that some criminals are innocent or guilty based on genetic analysis. What that now, that this new theory of the gene, what it will have, how it will affect it to the criminal system, criminal justice system, I don't know. But it does definitely looks like there's evidence that the gene changes, doesn't remain fixed. And yeah, this is the problem with science. Science will say one thing, and then a little later they will change their idea. And if you base your system of justice on science, then the whole thing may become undone after a few years. This is the danger. Anyhow, the truth, the search for truth must go on. Even some people lose their lives or whatever. The search for truth goes on.
For example, you compare the gene to Encyclopedia of Britannica. And when the message inside is changed, then
yes,
the text will also change, and it will make
your knowledge is also changing. Of course, Encyclopedia Britannica has changed so much over the years because some things have been proved, disproven, other knowledge is coming. So the encyclopedia as a whole does not remain the same from one year to the next. It changes, and as our knowledge changes, but Bhagavad Gita has remained unchanged as it is for so many generations.
No, but I try to say
transcendental knowledge and material knowledge is different like that. Transcendental knowledge does not change. Material knowledge will change from one generation, one year to the next, because that knowledge is imperfect. What's that?
What I'm trying to say is what certain Christians come up with the argument that if you change the gene, which is like a sentence, you insert some letters into the sentence, then the sentence, words will lose the meaning.
Yes,
so,
well, because their whole idea of the gene is wrong. The gene, that was just a theory. They call it the central dogma, actually. Watson and Crick, when they developed this theory of the gene, they called it the central dogma of biology. They used the term dogma themselves. And they said, according to this dogma, the gene replicates according to the certain chemical basis. It can form proteins. And the protein has its structure determined by the gene. And the gene is fixed. Certain processes occur whereby the base pairs combine to form a protein. And the structure of that protein will be dependent upon the nature of the gene that is used to make them. And that was the central dogma, that genes come first, then proteins come. But of course, the scientists know that the DNA itself is made from proteins. Without proteins, the DNA would not be created. So somehow or other, what came first, the protein or the genes? Protein is necessary. Although the protein is created by the DNA, the protein was necessary to create the DNA itself. One thing. Next thing is that they now find that the gene is not fixed. It can modify itself. One time. And another time it can change its structure and appear in a different way entirely. And this is by completely internal processes. There's nothing special that has to be done. No radiation, no x-ray, no mutational force from outside. But by the cell's own determination, it can rearrange this genetic code. And this is how bacteria are able to develop resistance to antibacterial antibodies. They found that the gene the genes are modified within the bacteria, and this way it creates different enzymes and different proteins in order to counter antibody substances that are injected into the bacteria that try to kill the bacteria. It is not that, new bacteria evolve. They're not that new bacteria. The bacteria themselves change themselves, mutate themselves in order to adopt to a better defensive mechanism to avoid the bacteria. So this
but
is
they
the
do also
theory.
Use this. I think they do also use this theory to prove that one species can change into another.
No.
Very close.
Well, they try to, but they have not observed. They have not observed that. You see, this is their theory of evolution. But the only thing they observe is that a bacteria can mute itself, mutate itself, to form another bacteria. Just a bacteria. They don't form a giraffe.
From
that mutation, they only form another bacteria.
It seems. That there is a direct implication of this. If this is this evidence is there, then it seems the direct implication is neither the gene or the genome or nor the body is the the defining principle of a cell.
That
must be
exactly.
Another category of reality.
Yeah. So then they say that the only way that can that the bacteria can be explained is that there is some conscious agent. There's some informational agent who is manipulating that whole thing that within the bacteria is the only way they can explain it. They have come to that conclusion. Nobel laureate Barbara McClintock, she has come with that conclusion that the only way to explain that is there must be some agent who is manipulating the bacteria, bacterial cell body, to make all these different changes because they can't find any particular material center which is coordinating all that. It acts as a whole. As if it were making.
Can you send me an article about this, Maharaj?
We're preparing that article. And hopefully, when we print our next science and scientist, we will have that in there.
But I mean, some reference on this.
Yeah. I will put some references and everything. And you can all read that. And study that in more detail.
Maharaji?
What's that?
Maharaji, I just wanted to say that it is too much time, I guess. And our some Bharati Swami is waiting for you, Maharaj. He has joined online. Yes.
All right. Yes, but now it's very late.
I'm sorry to interrupt that.
Happy you told me. But I also realize it's getting very late, but there were so many questions in there. Try to answer some of them. My humble Dhanavad Pranams. Humble Dhanavad Pranams. Well, thank you so much for your participation.
For the lively session.
Yes. Dhanavad. Of course.
Maharaj, somebody has come for you. I guess this Prasushin Prabhuji asked me to put him. Bharati Swami.
Maharaj, Bharati Swami Maharaj is a disciple of Govinda Maharaj. He's from Russia. He joined today.
Oh, okay. Dhanavad Maharaj. My humble Dhanavad Pranams to you. If you want, we can talk. Let us end the session, then we can talk if you have time. All right. Oh, glorious is Srila Prabhupada. Oh, glorious is Srila Maharaj. Oh, glorious to all the worthies. Sri Bodh Dhanavad Pranams.
All glorious to Srila Bhakti Madhav Maharaj. Jai.
Jai.
Sri Bodh.